I'm Brad Templeton with Robocars.com. Recently, I got the chance to sit down with Amnon Shashua, founder and CEO of Mobileye. Mobileye began by quickly taking the lead in machine vision-based driver assist, or ADAS, with ambitions into self-driving. Along the way, it was bought by Intel. Shashua is one of the most thoughtful leaders in the space and by far the leader when it comes to moving to self-driving from an ADAS background. I met with Professor Shashua to discuss his vision. As I will always work to do in my coverage, I did not seek to rehash what has been said in the press releases. In this case, I recommend you look at either the 9-minute or full hour videos that he made to talk about their new products and strategy. You will find links to those videos, as well as a link to my own written analysis of Mobileye's plans in the description. I will almost never recommend a 1-hour video, but this one is worth it if you want to go deep. The written article contains some tidbits from the interview, but this video gives you the chance to hear Professor Shashua's own words on 4 key questions: redundancy and sensor fusion, mapping, nailing down the algorithms and hardware, and especially robo-taxi plans. The interview was edited down to some key parts. I've been making more videos, which means I want the special status YouTube gives you with 1,000 subscribers. It's now required by federal law that I pester you to gently press the subscribe button should you want to see more of this sort of in-depth coverage and analysis. Please don't smash it. You'll see insight into self-driving cars, Tesla, Waymo, electric cars, and transportation in cities of the future. Now on to my conversation with Amnon Shashua of Mobileye. So I'm going to be getting right into some questions, mostly where I see, you know, things that I don't yet understand. I actually think you guys are doing a very good job. I'm very impressed with a lot of things that Mobileye has done. So if it doesn't seem that way when I ask the questions, don't worry about that, because I'm like this with everybody. So you said, or one of your folks said, that you felt that if you could get an MTBF of 1,000 hours out of the vision system, and you can get an MTBF of 1,000 hours out of the LiDAR radar system, that together, you know, that would produce a 1,000,000-hour MTBF. Now, that's clearly that you need a lot of convincing. That's my first question: is what can you really get? Because they're not, the failures of these two things are not independent events. So what is it hope you can do?
No, if you look at aviation also have lots of redundancy. No one claims that redundant systems are statistically independent. No one even tries to prove it.
Okay. You create robustness. Must have been one of your people then. But anyway.
So sometimes you need to kind of explain things at the most basic level and not, you know, to be too much professorial in explaining things. So nobody's claiming that, you know, systems are statistically independent. So if they're statistically independent, then you can, you know, multiply the probabilities. But because we're talking about different modalities, you know, there is quite a lot of independence, or quite a lot of independence in the error profile. And so what does, you know, what does the idea of this is, you know, if you simply do an OR gate at the perception level, it's not that you build two separate systems end to end. You build two separate perception systems. The driving policy is one driving policy. They're not two different driving policies. It's the perception that is built in a way in which makes it more difficult to develop. And when you're developing, you know, the perception using only cameras, there are all sorts of weaknesses that cameras have, and you are not using the other sensor modalities to compensate for those weaknesses. So it's more difficult from development wise, but it gives a much more robust system. So you do an OR gate. Say, for example, one perception system said that there is a obstacle ahead. The other perception system did not say that there is an obstacle ahead. So in an OR gate, you say there is an obstacle ahead. So what is the price to pay here? The price to pay here that you can get a higher level of false negatives, of false positives, right?
Yeah.
There isn't an object there. But if each system is built in a way in which for 10,000 hours of driving, it doesn't make a mistake, then those false positives at the end of the day would contribute only to some comfort level nuisance, but not for safety. On the other hand, it will contribute a lot in terms of reducing false negatives. Because what is really scary about the perception system that it will miss an object. You miss an object and you hit that object, this is where you can create an accident on your own fault. But if you are more conservative that you need to be, it's a comfort issue. It's not a safety issue.
Right. Obviously, so false negatives are the ultimate evil, and you do have to you have to get those below a certain level. But you can't tolerate very many false positives. You don't have a product you can sell if it's constantly breaking for ghosts.
So the idea is not to take two crappy systems and put them together, right? Mm-hmm. Right? If you take two crappy perception systems, then you'll reduce the false negatives, but then you are increasing the false positives, and now you have a system that is so crappy that you cannot drive it. But so, if you take each system has a 10,000 hours of MTBF, and this is what we are aiming at, not 1,000 hours, 10,000 hours of MTBF, each system, it means that each system is pretty good. It's not sufficiently good to remove the driver, because we need more than 10,000 hours MTBF. But now each of them is quite good. And now when you do an OR gate, you may not get 10 to the power of 8, but you'll get something much, much better than 10 to the power of 4.
Well, I'm trying to contrast this with the what you might call the classic sensor fusion approaches that many people take. And there are many different sensor fusion approaches, which include just the OR gate. I mean, just saying, did sensor A see it, or did sensor B see it? Although most people try and do something a little bit smarter. They try and say, let me look at what we've got from both sensor systems, or the three different sensor systems, however many they've got. And let me try and be a little bit smarter about determining what it is and if it's there or not. And so why is it smarter to do it completely independently and just OR the two together?
So ask yourself the following. If you take a fused system, low-level fused system, and you shut down the cameras.
Well, no, but nobody does it really at the low level, though, right?
Okay, so if you don't do it at the low level, if you are able to create a system in which you shut down all the cameras, or you shut down all the ladders, and the system still operates at a high level performance, it means that you did something much more robust than a system in which you shut down one sensor and then the system collapses. So it's a matter of designing for robustness, mm-hmm. right? Don't be hung up on this multiplication of probabilities.
Okay, no,
you're developing something that is inherently more robust if you are taking the long route of development. Being able to take just a camera system and being able to do an end-to-end autonomous driving just with a camera system is very, very difficult, because cameras have weaknesses, right?
Yeah.
So you're taking the long route of development, and the dividends that you get there, you have a more robust system.
Just to to reflect that, there's a former customer of yours, and I have one of his cars, and I just got the FSD product on mm-hmm. my vehicle, and I've been driving around my home with it, and the MTBF is measured in minutes and sometimes seconds, which is obviously not a good thing about them, but that's a purely camera based system, of course. And
we have also a camera based system, and the performance level is if you look at the clips, the unedited clips that we showed over now we added Paris and Tokyo and New York and Tel Aviv and Munich and Jerusalem. You see a much, much higher level of performance. And this is one unique element that we have, that our crowdsourced maps are much more rich and accurate than what Tesla is building. And this helps you getting your MTBF to be at a much higher level. I can tell you that by the end of this year, we will get the MTBF of the camera system to way above 1,000 hours. So we're not talking about minutes.
Yeah, no, you have to, obviously. And of course, depending what you mean by F in MTBF, because there are different levels of failure, of course. There's full safety failures where you would have a contact.
It's a failure that leads to an accident.
Okay, so you're using that strong definition. Yeah. Which is I was just trying to see what it was about your approach versus some of the other sensor fusion approaches that people are doing. And I'm not seeing as much difference as I thought originally. I mean, I think it's definitely you're on the right track by using the different sensor modalities, and you're on the right track by using REM, which obviously Tesla has.
I think it is different. Ask yourself, any of the other actors, if they shut down a subset of their sensors, could they continue operating? I think not.
Well, I mean, because, I would say
it's a low-level fusion.
I was working at what is now Waymo, and of course, as I said at the beginning, that vehicle didn't even have a camera, and it operated pretty well. You know, was it a 10,000 RMTBF in those days? No.
No, but today's system, if you take that today's Waymo system, right? If you shut down the cameras and it will work as well as it did back in 2011, then they are doing redundant systems. I don't know what Waymo is doing.
But no, I'm not there anymore myself. So yeah, I can't.
Yeah, but if you shut down the cameras and the car would stop producing a perception, a sensing state that is actionable, it means that they're doing kind of a very simple low level fusion. And not doing a redundant fusion.
They're definitely not doing a low-level fusion. They definitely try and apply as much intelligence as possible to the fusion, and so do many other teams that I've talked to. There may be teams that are doing a more primitive and low-level fusion.
Yeah.
One thing that surprised me was the original REM proposal seemed to be focused on trying to get the map as small as possible and getting the data transmitted to be as small as possible.
It is the same thing. It's 10 kilobytes per kilometer. So there's harvesting and then there's the map building. The harvesting is 10 kilobytes per kilometer. That's still...
So even you're getting track logs from every vehicle to help understand where vehicles drive on the road, where they pause, where they, what decisions they make and what places they do, so that you can get a better understanding of paths to plan. Matched on what humans have done when they've driven these roads. And that's just 10 kilobytes?
10 kilobytes per kilometer. This is what it is. If it's more than 10 kilobytes, see, if the bandwidth is high, you'll not be able to convince car makers to send you this data because it will start costing, right? We are talking about the cost of, of cents of, if you drive 20,000 miles a year, it'll be $1 cost.
Okay. Yeah,
this is the true, really game-changing thing here. Now, sending images to the cloud or high bandwidth data to the cloud is it's okay, but who's going to send it?
I don't know. In history, it's never been the right bet that bandwidth will be expensive. It's always been the better bet that bandwidth will get cheaper and cheaper with time. Another thing you said in one of your other statements this week or last week was that in design of the IQ Ultra, which just seems to have a nice architecture, you've filled it up with lots of different cores. You've got RISC-V cores, you've got GPU cores, you've got everything in there that you'll need and lots of TOPS. And, it's not just TOPS, of course, but you do want to have a fair number of them in order to pull this off. But you said something that surprised me, which was you felt that now we're pretty confident we know what algorithms we're going to use to solve this problem. So we can because you have to tape this out years in advance of when it's going to be in cars. And, I'm not sure that's ever been true that we, if you said, did we know a few years ago what exactly we would want today?
Well, we were sort of mature
in this way. And that's my question is, are we mature?
Yeah, I think we are. Because if you look at the vehicle with 11 cameras and two IQ5 chips, which is now being shipped in China, about 8,000 vehicles have been shipped. There's an over-the-air update that will gradually push entire customer functions. But what that vehicle can do, you see that in all the clips that we have been posting over the past year and a half. So we can do an end-to-end drive. So driving policy is heavy compute. You can see our vehicle driving in congested traffic, like in New York and in Paris, places like that.
It's impressive. I've driven in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, and I know they're not all that easy compared to here around my house.
So we have all that running on two IQ5s, right? So we have an end-to-end experience, which is, again, the MTBF is not high enough to remove the driver. But we have a full end-to-end going from perception to action, in congested traffic, running on two IQ5s. So this gives us the confidence of now understanding what is really the compute architecture we need in order to complete all the redundancies that we have. Because we have now also another vehicle running only LADARs and a couple of radars. That one is using half an IQ5, just to give you kind of a... So, but we have plans for more internal redundancies. For example, we showed that last CES, we showed a module called the VDAR. The idea is that
No, I know what it is.
That, yeah, yeah. Multiple cameras. You can create a cloud of points, a 3D a cloud of points. And we have additional internal redundancy. So we know each of those internal redundancies, how much compute in terms of IQ5 they need. So that put us in a position that now we can, you know, make a decision of what is really the compute we need in order to finish the task. It's something that 3 years ago would be more speculative. And then we would either overestimate and create a much bigger, a chip that we need, or underestimate. Today, we are confident that we're not going to overestimate or underestimate. And this is where the IQ Ultra comes into play. It's equivalent to about 10 IQ fives, and the cores, the CPU cores, and the accelerator cores, the 64 accelerator cores, and so forth, are all built with the exact algorithms in mind. So it's not kind of, here's a general purpose big machine, go feed it with, you know, with general purpose algorithms. It is based on the fact that we did an end-to-end, we successfully did an end-to-end driving experience with an MTBF that is good enough for a level 2, not for a level 4, but it has all the components. So it is different than saying, okay, let's build a 1000 TOPS machine and, you know, open compute, and let's have actors put their software there. You may end up with a level 4 system, but from a cost perspective, you'll not be able to scale. It's all about cost performance at the end of the day. And this is where Mobileye always excelled is. And this is why Mobileye's, you know, market share is so high, because it is putting the right silicon and the right software and embedding them together that you create the efficiency with the right cost performance trade-off. And the same thing will happen also with level 4.
This is where you'll have an opportunity.
To build a business, you need scale.
This is where you'll have an opportunity to surprise me again.
Okay.
Because I certainly have always said and continue to believe that it is not just a question of increasing MTBF, that the MTBF difference between ADAS and self-driving, I don't use those evil level words, is not just quantitative. There is a qualitative difference between that, with that much scale of MTBF. And so it requires practices in computer vision that you have to classify as breakthroughs, rather than simply we just train our networks better and we have more compute for them. That there's something about it. But
no,
this is
not what we claim. This is not what we claim. This is why we're doing the redundant systems, right? So we have now a system that recognizes everything, creates a sensing state, which is good enough for driving policy to drive in congested traffic in Paris and in New York City, right? So what do we need in order to create a higher MTBF? It's not just training bigger networks. It's creating all those redundancies. You know, LiDAR, radar redundancy as a subsystem. Also internal redundancies. This is how you go and increase your MTBF. It's not making the network bigger. It is creating redundancies.
I was oversimplifying when I say it would be just that. It obviously has to be. But there's stuff that I think we still don't know how to do. That's the main thing. And so I don't know if we know what algorithms. Now, it doesn't mean that you haven't.
I don't
think
there's stuff we don't know how to do. I think we there all the stuff we know how to do. This is the point. We're working on this area for quite a number of years, doing things at the right pace. We never overestimated the time. We never overhyped the time it will take us. We never said next year we're going to have something ready. Back in 2016, we said 2021 we think is the time frame. So now it shifted, you know, half a year or so. So
no,
we have
no software has ever been late before. So I don't blame you. There's a lot of people out there say, "Hey, they told us 8 years out it was going to be 2020 and it wasn't." So clearly, it's all failed. The people have never worked in software before. But
we had the plan, which is kind of a 5-year plan, and we have been executing on this plan. Take for example REM. You know, let's not just focus on AV. Take for example REM. We have been talking about it since 2016. We have been launching the harvesting vehicles by BMW and Volkswagen and Nissan, and then there are now many more car makers that are sending us data. And this year with Volkswagen, we showed that this is actually in production, the maps, not the harvesting. Mm-hmm. The maps are in production in premium ADAS. You know, you buy a Volkswagen ID.4, an EV car. It has the map installed, and you know it's over the air all the time, so it's cloud-based, and you can do things that with a regular ADAS you cannot do. You can drive on a rural road, which has an on-way traffic, and it will keep the right path in a lane centering function. It has data about, you know, traffic lights in association with drivable path and with pedestrian walking zones. So now you can think of a function that will, you know, prevent people running a red light. Mm-hmm. This is something that it would be very, very difficult to do if you don't have all this prior data about this particular junction, because it's not enough to arrive to a junction and detect that there are five traffic lights.
No, of course.
Which path is relevant to which traffic light? It's quite tricky. And you need to do it at very, very robust detection levels. Otherwise, it will create a nuisance to customers. So it's actually now on the road. And you know, the talk with Jim Farley says that also the Blue Cruise of Ford is going to have this. So we have been we made a plan, and we have been executing on this plan quite nicely.
When you did your hour deep dive at CES, or whatever we're going to call being at CES, you had a bunch of slides at the end about robotaxi plans, and you went over them very quickly because it looks like you'd run out of your time. So yeah. I want to hear more about your plans there. Are you going to, through MOVEit, run a robotaxi service, or are you going to let your customers do it?
So we have partnerships on all levels. So we have partnerships in which we supply a vehicle and they do the rest of the stack in terms of the customer relationship, the fleet optimization, mobility intelligence, and so forth. We have relationships where we provide the vehicle, the customer does all the rest, but we also, through MOVEit, do also in parallel. We have relationships in which we sell only the self-driving system. The partner brings the cars. We integrate the self-driving systems into the cars, and they do all the rest. So we have on all value nodes we have a presence, because we don't know really what's going to pan out. Do we need to go all the way to customer facing application like an Uber, or can we just be there at the self-driving system, or do we need to integrate into a vehicle and sell a vehicle with a self-driving system? Do we need to do the mobility intelligence, kind of the fleet optimization? Do we need to do the customer facing? See, it's hard to know. This is why we're prepared to do everything, but do it carefully in order not to spend billions of dollars. Do it carefully by building all those partnerships and see what works. What plays out the most efficient way. So we have all those relationships. You know, we have with Transdev, with the Lore, with Udelv on goods delivery. We have with P3, which is a small EV car maker that's buying the self-driving system. We have with the Murabani in Japan, Willer in Japan. We have with the Schaefer with the skateboard, which we use the skateboard. They take our self-driving system with their skateboard and build the vehicles. We have with the Sixt, where in Munich, we supply the vehicles. Sixt does all the management of the vehicles and the customer facing, but we also do the customer facing in parallel through MOVEit. So a customer can order the vehicle through Sixt or can order the vehicle through MOVEit.
So you'll be competing with your customers then?
Sixt is not a customer; it's a partner.
But I mean, Ford, for example, is Ford is buying lots of Mobileye chips. If they do a robotaxi based on IQ Ultras, Ford also has Argo, and they want to want to run their own service.
I think the state of the world has much more competition than it used to have, and companies learn how to live through a competition. For example, our customers like OEM, some of them, are doing internal development, trying also to compete with us like GM. So, and we're still supplying to GM. Competition is a new state. that has been evolving in the past 10 years, and you know, companies learn how to live with it.
It'll be an interesting landscape because many of the big car OEMs who fear the robotaxi world are afraid of, you know, being the Foxconn of the game, where they're just providing the car platforms and all the customer ownership is in the hands of Moovit or Waymo or other such companies. So you'll definitely, I'm sure, run into some back and forth on that.
But we're also working on a consumer AV, which is not the robotaxi. This is what we announced also with Zeekr 2024. So a consumer AV, and I also mentioned that at the CES, it's not clear, you know, which future is to believe in. The future of robotaxis taking over the world, or the futures of, you know, consumer cars. You buy a car and it's level four. And we are doing both. That means we are building it in a way that it's good enough for consumer AV, and then of course it's good enough also for robotaxi.
The answer is, of course,
unique from Mobileye.
The answer is, of course, it's not one that wins. There will be both. And
But if you are Waymo, you are betting only on one future.
That's true.
Waymo's technology, it's not on a consumer level in terms of cost, in terms of geographic scalability.
Yeah, but
the
when
same
is...
thing Cruise, the same thing Argo.
When has anything with computers, you know, not gotten cheaper with time?
Yeah, you take something that costs many, many tens of thousands of dollars and reducing it, you know, 20-fold time, it's not something that you get through scale.
This is another area that Mobileye can surprise me on, because I think everyone's focused on safety right now, and so cost is not their issue. They just want to be able to get out there and learn. And they will reduce costs later is the approach that almost everyone's taken. Mobileye has taken a different approach. You come from the ADAS world. You come from now you're a tier one. You started out having to be, down the tiers. And so you had to make things that the car companies would argue with you over pennies on the price. And the other companies didn't go through that.
Cost is a very, very critical element. People, you know, sometimes forget that, you know, if things are not at the right cost level, it becomes a science experiment and not a business. And if you build something that is too expensive, the likelihood of getting the cost down is sometimes it's not realistic. Therefore, you need to kind of purpose build it. You need to build it in a way that you can believe you can bring the cost down. And this is why we build the maps. This gives us the geographic scalability. This is why we're doing this redundant system so that we can take only the computer vision system and create a business out of it. This is what we're doing with Zeekr or what Tesla is doing. It's only a camera system for level two. This is why we're building the imaging radars, because we believe that the imaging radars can, with the right development, become a standalone sensor. Today, a radar is not a standalone sensor. It can compete with a LiDAR. And then instead of having 360-degree LiDAR, you have only a front-facing LiDAR, and you can bring the cost down considerably.
Imaging radar is great.
For a 2025 timeframe, for a system, cost level way below $5,000.
What cost do you think you can achieve for your FMCW LiDAR that you're building with Intel's fabs?
We are planning the MSRP of about $1,000.
Okay. I mean,
to sell it at around $1,000.
That's, now they could be lying to me, but most of the LiDAR startups, and I think there's about 3,000 LiDAR startups maybe, they all think they're going to get about $250, but that may be just a dream number.
It depends on the spec. You know, God is in the details, right? I can also build you a 250 FMCW LiDAR with a much now spec down, with lower spec. The kind of spec that we're providing, since we're going to have only one LiDAR, and front-facing is the most critical area because there are hazards on the road and so forth. The spec there is very, very, very high. And a $1,000 MSRP is way below anyone else's with the same spec.
Yeah, no, I am. I agree. I think that I think you've aimed at the right target. I think imaging radar is also sort of the, I mean, it's not a secret. There are many. I've got a small investment in Arbi in Israel and other companies that are trying to build imaging radars. Yeah. All right. Good to see you.
Okay. Thank you, Brad. Bye bye.
I hope that was informative. Check out my Robocars playlist and stay subscribed for more video coverage of Tesla's so-called full self-driving beta and a video showing why Even though humans can handle the roads without a map, maps are still the only reasonable approach, just as Amnon said. Until next time.